This is an interview with Governor Attia. This is tape 44, side 2.
Well, we did go to...
But the agreement was not formalized?
In China.
In
yes,
China.
In
mm-hmm.
Fuzhou.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then you also went to... Did you go to Korea that first trip? You had planned on going to Korea. Did you actually end up going then?
You know, I'd have to go back and look and see. I can't remember.
Because I didn't find anything in the news about...
84 was a good year. The year we got the announcements by Fujitsu for both Fujitsu America and Microelectronic. 84 was the year we got rid of the unitary tax.
Mm-hmm. And then you also went to China during that same fall of 84. That was a separate trip, though, wasn't it?
Strange, I can't remember.
I had down here that it was your third trip to Japan and your first to China as governor in September.
Well, it could very well be. We would go from Japan. I'm trying to think about air carrier and all the rest.
You did so much traveling during that period of time, it must be easy to get confused.
I think we went from did we go from Japan to China? I can't recall. I can honestly recall. But the trips were there, both of the trips.
Well, you the early news articles said that you had planned on going to Hong Kong, South Korea, and Singapore during that trip too, but then those sort of fell off your itinerary.
Yeah, we never did get to Singapore during my entire career.
And why was that?
Well, it just didn't work out well enough. The thing, my motivation is, okay, I'm going to go where our likeliest prospects were. Mm-hmm. And that I'm getting now near the end of my term, as you know, in terms of missionary work, which is, you know, you have to go several times, that it's really kind of hard to crank up a missionary when we're got to about another 2.5 years to go. Mm-hmm. So, or 3 years. So we never did get to Singapore. Maybe should have done that earlier. There was even some discussion about seeing what could be done in South America, mm-hmm. because that was a potential market as well. But I'd consumed so much of my time and energy in the Far East, and that's where our best prospects were anyway. In my mind, I was going to go where the best prospects were. Mm-hmm. That just to go and start doing, crank it up some more missionary work was just a little late for me to be doing that.
You also, on this trip, were planning on opening up a new trade office in Tokyo for Oregon.
Yeah, we opened it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Did that get any news coverage over there?
Oh, I think it probably did. It's hard to tell how much and who paid any attention to it, but we were joining some other states that already had offices there.
It was the largest trade mission in Oregon's history, 50-plus members.
God, it was a tough job.
Oh, that was
tough. That was maddening. It really was. We went over several times. I ended up by going to Japan 9 times as a governor, which they tell me, I didn't keep track, was the most trips of any single governor. Doesn't mean that states may have gone, but there were different governors. No governor made that many trips to Japan than I did. But you know, you go where you think you can get some work done.
But it must have been incredibly difficult to organize 50
it's terrible.
People.
And from there on, it was just. Me and Tom Kennedy, mm-hmm. you know, someone from economic development and me, and we just go do it. Because mm-hmm. it was so time-consuming for the staff to help set up appointments, arrange transportation for the delegation. You know, they all had their different plans, and it was an overload, is mm-hmm. really what it was.
One interesting thing in terms of publicity that was going on at the same time was that there was that very popular program in Japan called From Oregon with Love, mm-hmm. and the filming of that was going on and was playing in Japan. during that period?
I think I mentioned earlier that the beginning with the NEC announcement, there was a great deal of penetration by Oregon in the business community. Mm-hmm. From Oregon with Love spread the word of Oregon throughout all of Japan. It was exceedingly popular and continues even today. They're going to come in, whether they have film or going to film, I'm not sure. But
a sequel?
Well, they've got to change their stories a little bit, but they still come here and have a story mm-hmm. that relates, but it's not the same story. It's a wonderful story.
The story is basically of a Chinese or a Japanese family that comes to live in
well,
Oregon.
Yeah, there's a sister and brother, and if I recall correctly, their parents were killed in automobile accidents. The young sister was involved in sports at school or in swimming or something like that, competitively. And so she stayed, I think, with some relatives in Japan. And he, the young boy, came to visit, stay with his uncle and his uncle's wife in Oregon. Great story. I've watched it on television in Japanese. And you can tell what the story is just by watching it. Beautiful photography. The only problem with it, if there's any problem at all, is, of course, that's what the Japanese saw, which was Central Oregon. That's where the uncle was, and he had a farm, and so they think that's what Oregon looks like.
Ironic sense that most of people in America think that that it's just a complete rainforest over the whole state.
The photography is magnificent. It's just the photography itself. Gee. Kind of chuckled because the uncle, I can recall, picked up his nephew at the airport. This little boy, sort of lost looking, uncle really not knowing him very well, except he knew that was his nephew. And they met up, and he gets in this pickup truck. And it's kind of an old beat up pickup truck, which is kind of hard to imagine the Japanese driving a pickup truck. And then they're heading toward, I know, Central Oregon. So they're driving. Well, I recognize, and again, they wanted some homes and some flowers and, you know, nicely. They're actually driving up here in back of the zoo. And I know that. I know where it is. And I'm laughing. I know that's not the way to Madras, you know. But it was just a matter, you know, as far as their audience was concerned, they're just homes and flowers and rhododendrons and azaleas and that sort of thing. But I'm kind of chuckling. But it's a great story. You watch the story, and you don't really need to have it interpreted. The other thing that I found so fascinating, would be his aunt. That would be his uncle's wife, Nana. Nana is she played the part of the farm wife. She is in Japan, very well-known entertainer, singer, and theater. Very attractive woman. Dresses very high style in her private life or her entertainment life. And there she is in the film with braids and an apron, very plain looking. It was very hard for me to make that conversion. I've seen Nana in Central Oregon, and having seen Nana in real life, a very, very attractive Japanese woman, very vivacious, entertainer, singer, and all the rest. I met them several times at the airport. We actually put some state money in just to encourage them to come. The benefit we couldn't have paid for. There's no way, that, you know, if we were trying to get that message out to all of Japan, there's no way we could have ever afforded anything like that. And that kind of induced them to come, and they liked it and continue to come. And I got to be very good friends with, now I understand Mr. Hieda was, I think, a general manager. I'm not sure of the title. He became president, and just learned the other day that now he is moved up in their hierarchy. The Fuji Television has publications as well as the television.
and now Mr. Hiatus even moved, so his responsibilities include both. That breakthrough came because this is in Japan, it's a family thing, and the son died. And so instead of the son moving up the ladder, Mr. Hiata is the one that has done it. We got to be very good friends. And then Nakamura came initially as a producer of For Morrigan Will Love. He is just the neatest guy in the world. Great sense of humor. And I got to know him. Now he's moved up in their hierarchy as well. And when I go to Japan, we play golf. We get together and have dinner and play golf. It's wonderful. They speak very little English. And maybe understand a little, but not a great deal. And I don't speak any Japanese at all. And we have Mr. Motomura, who is a special advisor to our Oregon office, formerly Japanese State Department, formerly Consul General, and he was even a Consul General here in Portland. He is our special advisor in the Oregon office. He is my interpreter. He doesn't do too well at interpreting, but he's my interpreter. And we get together, the four of us, and we have the grandest time. And we, you know, it isn't as if we were talking to languages we understand, but it isn't. But we just play golf and have dinner and just have a whale of a good time. Got to be very good friends. So it's one of those good relationships that happened. It isn't that we expect, they don't, you know, any economic, directly economic. Of course, they're helping Oregon immensely, but it isn't a business relationship, it's a friendship relationship. It's very good.
You also had Kenneth Meyer as Assistant State Agricultural Director on that trip as well.
Ken Meyer, I think he has a false leg. I've never seen anybody work as hard or move as fast as Ken Meyer overseas. He worked hard. He's retired from the Department of Agriculture and understood was doing his own consultation work. But we've been together in Hong Kong, we've been together, you know, on several overseas trips. And he works, I mean, he goes out, and, you know, it just, nothing gets in his way. He just is a hard-working guy and good representative for Oregon.
And you met Mike Mansfield while you were there.
Oh, yeah. God, that was a great, I really admired that guy. And we would visit every time I'd go. I'd call on Mike Mansfield, and really liked him a lot. We'd call on him, he'd be in shirt sleeves, and, hey, Vic, you want some coffee? Yep, and his assistant, you know, would come along, you want coffee, whatever his name was, yeah, that'd be fine. And he would go get the coffee, bring it in cups. That was something he liked to do, and we'd just sit there and shoot the breeze and talk about relations and, you know, the economy and whatever of Japan.
Did you know him prior when he was senator?
Not really, no. But we struck up a good relationship. I like him. I would think my trip wasn't complete if I didn't get a chance to call on him when I was in Japan. Every time I'd go, I would make that attempt.
Is he still alive?
Yep, I understand lives in Florida.
In Florida.
But I think he's a consultant for some company in New York, probably spends a little time there.
Does he go back to Japan?
I doubt it.
Yeah.
They really like him very much. They regard him very highly, and I think deservedly so. He was a good ambassador.
He followed the footsteps of, who was it that had been there since World War II?
I can't think of his name, but I know who you mean.
That ushered in Japan into the modern post-World War II era.
It was interesting that Mike Mansfield was a political appointment, not a career appointment. And as a matter of fact, the most recent appointment by Clinton, a political appointment, not a... Bush appointed a career person for Japan. But most often these political appointments are not too highly regarded by the State Department. But Mike Mansfield, very high marks out of the State Department as a political appointee. But he deserves it all.
In terms of, and of course after this trip to Japan, you went back to China. What are the advantages of being in a special economic zone? What is that? What does that designation do in terms of trade?
The I'm not that good an authority on it, but the central government held some pretty tight reins over their entire country. The governors aren't elected like our governors. They're appointed by the central government. And actually, a more powerful person is Secretary of the Communist Party in that particular area. There's a Secretary of the Communist Party in the Fujian province. That person is even more important than the governor. But they had decided they were going to have some special economic zones, giving the provinces freedom to do things without having to check with the central government. Mm-hmm. I can recall conversations, but it was something like they could issue bonds if they wanted to. There was a limit, though. What was it? I don't know, $5 or $10 million or something like that. They didn't have to report to the central government. They were fairly free. The freest of them, though, was in Xiamen, not Fuzhou. And that's even closer to Hong Kong. And there was quite a bit of economic activity, fairly modern economic activity that you didn't see anywhere else. I saw some very modern electronic plants. They were doing assembly work. They were very proud of a contract of manufacturing cigarettes, and we went to the cigarette factory. And all of that apparently has improved even more, and I'll see it this year. I'm going back again this year. There's been some major improvements.
Well,
I will tell you that when my impression then, 1984, almost like stepping back at least 50 years in time, going to China. Leaving the U.S., leaving Japan or Korea or Taiwan doesn't make any difference, and go there. And they were still building roads with the Chinese carrying baskets on their shoulder with rock. They had I took a picture, a steamroller, great big huge old thing. It was just sitting there. It wasn't really working. And actually, it's cheaper for them to use human effort than it was to try to buy a piece of equipment. Mm-hmm. And the people delivering on bicycles, very few automobiles. I was amazed the first morning I took a photograph, woke up, we got to China at night, and I saw this heavy, heavy smog. And I couldn't believe it because I knew there weren't that many cars. Where is this all coming from? And people were heating with and cooking with coal. And that's what was going on. They had no central sewage disposal. Every night people would put buckets out on the street and somebody would come by and pick it up. And really a bicycle traffic jam. I'm talking about Beijing. Obviously Fuzhou was no different. But I'm talking about Beijing. So that was my reaction. Gee whiz, it's like stepping back in time. Right. They use steam engines. Now, we just hauled out one here. It was on the front page of Aragon. It's called Nostalgic.
Right.
They're using them over there. There's no nostalgia. They're actually using steam engines. You know, choo-choos and steam coming out of the top and everything. But they want to move forward, and they're working at it. Now we'll see some improvements, I'm certain, from that time, which now would be 9 years ago.
As a result of that trip, there was a Chinese trade party that came to Oregon. And
that's right. Governor Hu Peng came. Mm-hmm. He great personality. He now is an important, relatively important person in the central government in Beijing. Mm.
And he came with a 17-man party, and I guess about 10 tentative deals in Oregon were... completed. And it was during that same time that you also unveiled an aggressive, highly visible tourism campaign called Oregon, You're More Than Welcome, mm-hmm. That combined with economic development. And I believe that you also used lottery and general funds for economic development, $115 million, including venture capital.
Yes. The whole idea was to stimulate economic development everywhere we could. That was part of the program that I began in 1979 and continued unabated till I left office.
And you also had the Governor's Media Excellence Awards for travel coverage, Expo 86. And
Expo 86 was, that was viewed with a lot of suspicion by a lot of people, but that turned out to be extraordinarily successful.
In Vancouver?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Very good. Mm-hmm. Very good for Oregon.
And then in
excuse me a second.
Yeah, go ahead.
Every time I do something, I was criticized for doing it. You know, when I'm just saying to you, every, you know, taking a trip, I was criticized, and doing this, I'm criticized. But the point is that being a businessman, I knew where I was going, what I was heading, what I wanted to do. And so the criticism really wasn't something that was a heavy burden for me. I said, well, that's their view, but I know what needs to be done.
Did that bother you at all, that you got that kind of criticism?
No. No, I knew I was on the right trail and doing the right thing.
Mm-hmm. You went back to Japan then in May of 1985. And that also was a large mission. I mean, there was 19 representatives from...
Yeah, well, we cut that down, though.
Did you?
There was a fairly large group that went to China with us. Hmm. Quite a large group that went to China with us.
You were attempting to get the Sharp RCA Corporation in a joint venture to push, and you were also pushing for a Sony plant. And... I think you had mentioned that before, that you had told the president of Sony that there was one four-letter word that wasn't in Oregon.
That's right. I've been working on them. Actually, the Sharp-Sony thing was an interesting deal. Had that been left to Sharp, the decision, mm-hmm. it would have been in Oregon. I had very good, honest, straightforward relationship with Sharp. With Sharp. The most disagreeable communication was with the RCA. Hmm. That was most disagreeable. And we went back and talked to them. They entertained us. They were deceptive. The whole thing was very, very unsatisfactory with RCA. I know for a fact, being told that, had the decision been Sharp, it would have been in Oregon. Hmm. But they were joint venturing, and it ended up in Washington. That was the other thing I'm so intensely competitive, and I want things for Oregon, and the press that came out that they were going to go to Camas, and that's okay. It's in our area, you know. It's something for our area, and the business that was accepted by the business community. Well, that's it's in our area. And my reaction was, baloney. I'm not the governor of Washington, I'm the governor of Oregon. I get no satisfaction that it's in the area.
Yeah.
There's no comfort to me that it was in the area. I was very very upset that it went to Washington and not to Oregon.
The paper said that they referred to this as a new episode in the long rivalry between Oregon and Washington, was in full swing last week, as blind rhetoric masked a transoceanic flurry of secret meetings and intrigue worthy of a spy novel.
Well, basically it was RCA intrigue. It wasn't Sharp. Sharp was not into that intrigue at all. They were pretty upfront. Mm-hmm. That was most unsatisfactory.
I guess Governor Booth Gardner was taking the same representatives from the companies on tours at the same time.
Yeah.
Was this the one that went to Camas then?
Yeah. Uh-huh. The, it's interesting, again, how you view things. To me, it was no matter that I don't want Washington to have something. That's what you mean, this fierce rivalry. It's that I wanted Oregon to have something. It wasn't that I wanted to keep something out of Washington. Mm-hmm. I wanted something in Oregon. Mm-hmm. So I view it differently. You know, what you call fierce rivalry is a matter of fighting, because you're going to fight against Washington. I wasn't fighting against Washington. I was fighting for Oregon. And that was my own view of it. It's the same thing. When I began my economic development, Oregon was competing against Washington, Arizona, New Mexico, California, Colorado. When I left, to my great pleasure, they were competing against us. We had a good team of people, well organized, well equipped. We knew what to do and how to do it. And you know, you can't expect to make every sale, and yet I expect to make every sale. I get disappointed if I didn't make every sale, but realistically, you know, you're not going to get every sale.
You're director of economic development for quite some time had been John Anderson, and then he switched and started working for
Fortunately,
Washington.
Booth Gardner stole him from me.
How was he able to do that, and how did you feel?
How did I feel?
Yeah.
I was delighted.
How so?
I was just thrilled that he stole him from me.
I mean, but you were happy with John Anderson's work?
No. No, I was very unhappy with John Anderson.
While he was in Oregon?
Yes, I hired him. I don't mind this being on tape. I don't want to show somebody a bad time. But he had been working for Spelman, and the city of Eugene had him heading up their economic development. I looked at him as a very bright guy. Very well organized fellow. And when I talked to him in the office about taking the job as the state director of economic development, I can recall it very vividly, and he was thinking about his relationship with Spelman. And he said, well, Governor, there's one thing I really want. I want to have access to you. John, I said, that's no problem at all. You know, access to me by my state agency was something that it was something I wanted. Mm-hmm. It wasn't something that I was trying to avoid. A year and a half later, I got him in the office. John, do you remember that conversation we had? Yeah. Did you want access to me? Yeah. I said to him, God damn it, John, I want access to you. Mm-hmm. He wouldn't return phone calls. He took credit for everything that happened. I kept trying to remind him, John, you know, we've been working real hard to build the foundation for the economic growth that we have. And I get into land use planning and, of course, unitary tax and a whole bunch of things, organizing my state agencies and a team of people and one-stop permitting and licensing, all of that. And this was all in place. Sure you had something to do with it, but you weren't the only one. He had some CIA background or some spy background, you know, in mm-hmm. military days, military. And really, I was delighted when he got stolen from me.
And you were happy with his replacement as Kennedy was
Tom Kennedy.
Yeah.
You bet. That was, finally, I wished I'd started years earlier because Tom was a good director of economic development. Mm-hmm. And I, of all of them, you know, I had my problems with, they were varying problems. But where the Oregonian was lamenting that this great guy, John Anderson, was stolen from us and all the rest, and I was quietly smiling.
Is there anything else about those all these trips up to this point, up to 1985, Japan, Korea, China, Taiwan, the Middle East, that you want to add to what you've already said? We'll have an opportunity later on because you make some other trips. But.
I don't think so. I want to repeat continually that this was an ongoing from January 1979 till mm-hmm. January of 1987, continually pushing, moving forward to diversify the economy of the state. And it is something that I would tell you was extraordinarily successful. Mm-hmm. That we had as our base agriculture and wood products, timber, and about half tourism. when I left, we had